John's gospel tries to wrap things up a couple of times, actually, with its own version of, and they lived happily ever after, sort of. First in John 20, and then in John 21 with these words. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. That's from today's reading. And then again, in the very next chapter in John 21, it goes like this. But there are also many other things that Jesus did. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that could be written. I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. My sophomore year in college, as I found myself struggling to reckon with a holy book that I wasn't sure included me, I wrote out the John 21 ending and stuck it on a bulletin board in my dorm room. I went scrounging around for it yesterday afternoon, fairly certain that it was in a box somewhere in Sally's parents' basement at this point. But sure enough, I'd kept it in one of the few photo albums I brought with me to DC. Jesus did many other things in the presence of his disciples. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. Sometimes as I meditated on this passage of scripture, I would picture the whole earth showered like confetti by millions of books, all telling the stories not contained in scripture. I would imagine what strange kind of day God must have been having to dream up something like an aardvark or a humpback whale. I would try to listen for the songs of lament that Hagar must have sung as she sat in the wilderness and waited to die. I would play out what Mary actually pondered in her heart, or wonder about whether Philemon ever released his slave Onesimus, or question if the early churches in Corinth and Ephesus really did figure out how to live together across their lines of difference. Do you ever wonder about all the things not written in the good book? About all the moments we don't know about that still, even in their silence, make up our canon? About all the moments that make up life's canon? About the perpetual, ever-flowing string of conversations had and silences held and miracles performed and laments professed and love shared, all these moments that live outside the bounds of any one book, yet are no less holy, no less wondrous, no less a part God's story? This is the richness of the gift given to us in Scripture. I hope I don't sound too heretical. I'm only about a month and a half in, so. But I really do think that the great gift of Scripture is that it's incomplete. The gift of Scripture is that a million other things could have been packed into it. And yet it's in its incompletion of sorts. It is perpetually inviting us into the ellipses of life. It is perpetually asking us to ask of it, what else is there? What other stories might we tell? But this doesn't keep Scripture from helping us make meaning of God and of ourselves and of the world around us. Instead, Scripture keeps expanding in us. And in a mysterious way, we keep expanding Scripture. As John's gospel reminds us in its beginning, or its version of once upon a time, if you will, the Word became flesh and dwelt, hung out with, did life with us. And not all the books in the world could tell that story. See, just as our stories and lives keep resurrecting the risen Christ in the world, our stories and lives keep resurrecting Scripture too. When we interact with these ancient texts and bear witness to God's work in the world, we add another book to the shelf of all that is yet left unwritten. We are living, moving, talking, scrolls. And Holy Scripture is being written and rewritten and newly written all the time, all around us. And somehow the more we read and engage and imagine all that is happening both within and beyond the text of Scripture, we start to find ourselves in these stories too. There's this moment in the book of Acts that expresses this so richly and beautifully for me. As one of the disciples, Philip, is on the road, he meets a eunuch. And this eunuch is reading from the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, but he finds himself confused by it. So he asked Philip, "Who's the prophet Isaiah talking about?" Let me read the passage for you so it makes a little more sense. This is the passage the eunuch is caught reading. "He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. By a perversion of justice, he was taken away. Who could have imagined his future? For he was cut off from the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people." As Philip and the eunuch get to talking, the eunuch begins to see that this text in Isaiah is about Jesus, the one who was oppressed and afflicted, the one taken away by a perversion of justice. And yet, I think that there's something else equally beautiful happening here. The text isn't only about Jesus. It's about the eunuch. Someone who is literally cut off from the land of the living. Someone who likely knew a thing or two about oppression and affliction because his life did not easily fit certain social and gender constructs. This text was deepening and expanding the life of the eunuch. And at the same time, the eunuch was deepening and expanding the beauty of the text. During one point in seminary, as I struggled to reconcile my sexual orientation and my fitness for ministry, converging into, as you can imagine, one just really big cesspool of uncertainty and fear, I felt completely lost and unclear about how to move forward. I was really ready to pack my bags and call it a day. I almost did. a number of times. One night after an evening class at the Divinity School, I stopped by Duke Chapel on my way to the car. And I settled into the back pew of this colossal empty space with Moses and the prophets just staring at me through their prisms of stained glass. And I had prayed, like I'd prayed before, that if God really meant to use me for anything remotely akin to ministry, I was going to need a really big Macy's Day parade to quell my self-doubt. God, do you really want me? I hardly want me right now. Why would you? And so I asked God again for the umpteenth time if I was called. I grabbed a Bible, closed my eyes, and flipped it open. It may sound like the oldest and cheesiest trick in the book, and though they might not like to admit it, even the most theologically trained resort to these tactics in a pinch. And there it was. My finger had dropped onto Psalm 110:4 in all its glory and hilarity. Here it is. You ready? And you shall be a priest forever in the order of Melchizedek. I burst into a fit of laughter right there in Duke Chapel. Melchizedek, huh? As it turns out, Scripture doesn't say much of anything about Mr. Mel. We're not even sure if he worshipped the Hebrew God. What we do have from a little story in Genesis is that this mystery man first offered bread and wine and then blessed Abraham. We don't know his credentials. He's no Levite or rabbi, and he's certainly not the first person we would have thought of to bless the father of all nations. But here he is anyway, right there, breaking bread, sharing wine, taking care of holy things. And as I spent the next few hours that night trying to figure out who in the name of Aunt Fanny Melchizedek was, I found that the text was expanding and deepening my life, answering the very question I couldn't answer for myself. It was offering me a blessing. It was claiming my priesthood for me. And at the same time, my life was expanding and deepening the text. My life could act as a light bearer for this little verse in Psalm 110. This is the mystery of the biblical text. It's not flat pages in a book. Quite the contrary, Scripture is meant to be three-dimensional, lived, and resurrected. In us. What is your Melchizedek moment? What is your eunuch epiphany? When have you found your story springing to life in Scripture's story? When has Scripture sprung to life as a result of your story? How is the resurrected Christ, the Word made flesh, coming to life again and again through you? There are also many other things that Jesus did. If every one of them were written down, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. Thanks be to God for all that remains unwritten, for all that is yet to be written, for all that will never be written. for all that you will write with your life and witness in the world. And thanks be to God that the whole world cannot contain a story like that.